No, I'm not for sale.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Colts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you for joining us on a Friday. I got my man Jake Arthur here for a little bit of bar talk. Jake, what's going on, my man?
Not a whole heck of a lot, buddy. What's going on with you?
Nothing. Enjoying the day. It's been a good day for me. How has yours been so far?
Yeah, not too bad. Just wrapping up a real busy week, getting ready for some Memorial Day weekend festivities. So yes. Let's get to it.
Looking forward to that myself, get an extra day off. From work, so loving that for sure.
Lots of food, lots of drinkage. I'm ready for that.
That's right. So let's just start it off with some interesting news that we've gotten in the past couple days. Grigson apparently has been hired as a senior personnel executive with the Cleveland Browns now. What are your thoughts on that initially? I mean, just if somebody told you that, hey, the Browns hired Ryan Grigson, what would be the first? I mean, would it be wow? Would that be the first thing out of your mouth?
Well, I mean, first off, it sounds like something that would come from The Onion or the fake Sports Center, because, I mean, the Browns and Grigson are counterparts of each other. You know, Grigson is the former general manager version of the Browns and vice versa. You know what I mean? And
yes.
I honestly do believe the Browns are going in the right direction, and at one time Ryan Grigson was a valuable cog in the machine of a scouting department. He's not a guy to lead your scouting department as the GM, but he was a respected member of the Eagles scouting department, so maybe he is valuable in a very limited capacity and just can't be the guy calling the shots. So
yeah,
I mean, otherwise, I completely agree. I mean, I completely understand if some people don't agree with it, and you could pretty much just chalk it up to Browns gonna Browns, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that you're right on the. I think you're right on the head there, as far as that he was respected as far as the scout. You know, people enjoyed or appreciated his role with the Eagles and what he did, which is exactly why in his initial year and probably his second year too, that they made as many trades as they did. Albeit they were tertiary, you know, nothing major or anything like that. And I don't even remember the fullback's name that they brought in the 2012.
Stanley Havili, I think.
Yes, yep, that's right.
Yeah.
That dude, tell you how much I appreciate fullbacks. But, I mean, you know, they brought him in, and I think there was a couple stories on it about how Grigson was just, I mean, people were so flabbergasted that Grigson got that job, first of all. And then people were even more flabbergasted. It's like, man, this dude hasn't been anything close to a GM. And not only is he getting the GM job in Indy, which is a good job in general, but he's getting Andrew Luck. You know, that was kind of the thing. He's going to be able to draft Andrew Luck, and this dude's going to be coasting forever. Well, you know, yeah. I think that, you know what, and I don't even think Grigson will be that bad. I mean, because he's going to be working under Sashi Brown and Cleveland there, and I think that he's, you know, he's going to be a guy not only taking orders, but he's going to be a guy who they look for that the tape stuff out of, because they've got all the other pieces as far as analytics and everything else. You know, he's just going to be an added ear and mouthpiece to talk in the scouting room ultimately. I think, I mean, I don't know exactly what his job title is at this point in Cleveland. Do you?
No, I feel like it was announced last night, but I didn't pay much attention to specifically what it was.
All I've seen is senior personnel exec. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those kind of generic, you know, senior executive of player personnel, one of those type of real cookie cutter titles.
Yeah. I think ultimately it's just going to be, he's one of the guys, you know, in that room. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. I mean, the guy's got obvious, you know, history in the league, and, you know, I don't know, whatever. I mean, it is funny to me though, that not only It's funny to me that it's the Browns, I think.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, do they not feel like they pulled the wool over his eyes when the Colts traded for Trent Richardson? Or did they think, you know, this guy's smart. He traded for a guy that we don't like, but he's going to be great in Indy or something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Did they think that, you know, Grixon made a wise decision with that trade? Because it almost makes you feel like they feel that way.
I think other than Jimmy Haslam as the owner, I feel like that was a different front office. I think Ray Farmer was probably running it then. So
for sure. But you know Haslam has something to do with anybody that's hired there.
Oh, yeah. And you know, Grigson, with all the trades and everything he made in the, 4 or 5 years he was here, I mean, he developed some contacts around the league. There's networking is very important. You know, networking and relationships, being able to pull the trigger on certain trades with some guys around the league, that's probably an underrated component of what he brings. But
yeah,
like you said, who knows exactly what his role is. He probably is just another experienced voice in there. Because, I mean, regardless of how good of a GM he was, he has been a GM for 5 or so years. So
right. You know, and just, I mean, thinking about the big picture of it all, you know, he's just a guy who's got that experience. I mean, why not bring him in? I mean, yeah. Trust me, there's a lot of guys that have half the experience that he is that are in similar roles. So, I mean, if nothing else, he does bring that experience in for Cleveland. So it's interesting. I mean, it's whatever, though. I mean, I don't think that anybody thought necessarily that Grigson would never get a job again in football. It's not like right. that. So that's kind
I of think it's good that Cleveland got their offensive line shopping spree done, because they can't, even though he's a former offensive lineman, they can't rely on him to scout linemen for him, because he's not super sharp at that. It's not a strong suit.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, you could say, I don't know, man, though. I mean, but think about it in general. I mean, we've had this debate probably, you know, obviously off air. But, I mean, I think that at least myself, I've had this debate, you know, with other people, like that I'm not a Grigson backer by any means at all. I appreciate the draft that he had last year because of the lineman that he brought in. You know what I mean? I mean, when look at the guys in the early days, okay, look at, like, the 2012, 2013 offensive lineman that he brought in. You know, the guys that he brought in, 90% of it was injury related. The reason they didn't work out.
Justice. Yeah. And
Donald Thomas. I mean, yeah. Think about the guys.
Donald Thomas, I'll still say to this day, that was a great signing. It just didn't work out because he got injured like 2 or 3 years in a row.
Right.
He was really solid for the Patriots before then. And by all accounts, it was a great pickup. It just did not work out. I have never liked him in his total job as a GM, but I respect a lot of the moves he made more than a lot of people do, because not everything he did sucked. He made some really good moves in his time.
Right. But, dude, I mean, think about it. Donald Thomas, Gozer Cherilis. Then you look at and look realistically, I was one of them. I will definitely say I was tooting, jumping around when I heard that we traded for Trent Richardson.
Oh, hell yeah, me too.
I don't even care what people think about it. And if you're lying to yourself out there, listeners, and saying you weren't, then just smack yourself in the face, because you're
I was geeked for that.
Yeah, everybody was, because it was a legit opportunity for the Colts. Whoa, we've got a running back now, a dude that's big and physical and was amazing at Alabama, and
a guy that got picked 2 picks after Andrew Luck did.
Yeah, legitimately.
So he was just as young as Luck.
2 of the first 3 picks in the draft. You know what I mean? In the 2012 draft we had now on our team. And I mean, that, and then what we've been talking about, you talk about the guys that he brought in, those guys just didn't work out. That's not terrible. I mean, some of his stuff was garbage. There's just no two ways about it. I'll never go against that. I'll never argue with that. But to say that, you know, he was just awful, he never addressed the offensive line position, is just ignorance. I mean,
no, he did. Never addressed it. He just never really addressed it successfully, even though there were some injuries. I mean, if you factor in even relative health for Donald Thomas, Gozer, Cherilis, then they probably have a decent offensive line to this day. But
yep. I don't even know if Gozer Cherilis was all that good then, but I tell you what, I don't remember hearing anything all that negative about him when the Colts picked him up.
At the time, he was like one of the better right tackles in the league for the Lions before the Colts had picked him up, enough to where they gave him the richest contract in the league for a right tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So he had kind of earned that contract. Some of these were good signings. He had to pay top dollar for them, but they were signings that most people assumed would make the Colts better. I mean,
yeah,
they just didn't work out. I'll never fault him for picking up guys that didn't work out because of injury. No one can predict that. They weren't injured before he got them.
Yeah, and you know what? The most common thing was a response when Irsay was on. I remember this like it was yesterday. When Irsay was on Twitter talking about all these guys he was bringing in, when they said that they had LaRon Landry in the building, I'm telling you, 99% of the replies to that tweet was, don't let him leave the building.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But he was a complete and total bust, a wash. And
People
are like, you know, still clowning on Grigson for some of these moves like that. But, man, remember what you thought when it came down to the wire there. When they were bringing these guys in, we loved it too.
Oh, absolutely. Because with Bill Polian, it was like pulling teeth for him to get any sort of free agent that had any sort of recognizable name.
Yep.
Now, as an experienced, seasoned football analyst, I totally respect building through the draft, and that's probably how I would approach it as well. Free agency is not a means to an end. It's a piece to the puzzle.
Right. But
and that's how Polian approached it, and Grigson, I mean, kind of went on some spending sprees. My bigger issue with Grigson's acquisitions were more draft-related. Even though he did have some really good draft finds, there were some that just were dead on arrival.
I agree with that. But think about those free agency spending times. What was going on when that happened? He came in.
Rebuild.
The entire thing was completely, like, just gutted. There was no real option otherwise. I mean, they had to do that just to fill the 90-man. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, Ballard did it this year. You know, don't get me wrong. Ballard's contracts look a hell of a lot better than anything that Grigson put together in the first two seasons he was here. I mean, there was a couple of them, you know, and in the end, Eric Walden's contract ended up, which a lot of us killed because he was garbage when he came in. He definitely got better while he was in Indianapolis.
He wound up being one of Grigson's more valuable pickups. He was just very expensive.
Yeah, but at the time,
it lasted the duration of his free agent contract.
Yep.
Which turned out to be kind of rare for any contract that was more than a year or two.
Not only that, I think about 4 years, $4 million a year. In the initial signing of that contract, that was heavy. But as the second and third year came and he started getting better, that was cheap.
And I also wonder how many of, I mean, Grigson as the GM gets, you know, he's going to be the face of every personnel decision that's made. But a lot of this is Pagano, and a lot of people don't acknowledge that. Guys like Tom Zivakowski, you're telling me that was Grigson and not Pagano?
Yeah.
Zivakowski was a safety for Pagano just before Pagano got here.
Mm-hmm.
Pagano brought in a lot of people in the first few years that had a connection to him at one point or another, and a lot of them didn't work out.
Yep.
Some of the guys that he fell in love with in the draft, too. So I mean, as much as I have disliked Grigson as a GM, I don't give Pagano any free pass either, because it seems like almost any guy that he's fallen in love with and has kind of been instrumental in bringing to the team has not worked out.
Not even close to working out.
Corey Redding was one of the outliers.
Yep.
And other than that, there hasn't been many that have been real well.
I agree. I totally agree. So, Jake, you've also been working on a bunch of fantasy stuff at PFS. What's one of the things you've come across that you kind of, as far as like what you think readers or listeners today will think is maybe something outlandish that you've put together as far as like your fantasy assumptions for next year with some of the new guys?
Well, you'll probably get a kick out of this too, because you recently had Kamar Aiken among your guys that you weren't super hot on.
I like him. I like him. I just think he's got. I think he's got a bust possibility with him.
Yeah, I think maybe expectations need to be tempered a little bit. But I actually just got done with his tonight before you and I just started talking, and it'll go live tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I've analyzed. Okay, let's say he beats Dorsett for the wide receiver three spot, okay. Right? Fans, a lot of time when they see a big name that they recognize, you know, they ooh and they ah. And I'll be honest, I really do like the Kamar Aiken signing. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's going to be competing for the first or second spot or anything, but I think he will wind up comfortably in that third role at receiver. But Lux, wide receiver threes in his 5 years. Dorsett last year, Andre Johnson the year before, Hakeem Nicks before that, Hayward Bey before that, and then T.Y. Hilton in 2012. Those guys have only averaged, you know, throw all their stats combined, you average, comes out to 38 receptions for 521 yards and 4 touchdowns per year. Damn. So while Kamar Aiken might be a pretty good signing for the Colts, a lot of fans kind of generalize it and might romanticize his role on the team to think it might be something huge. I think that stat line is probably something pretty realistic for him.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that. I mean,
38 balls, 500 yards, and 3 or 4 touchdowns. That sounds about right.
Yeah, I'd agree with that too. And I mean, and you think about that, you know, we do that. I do that myself. And I know that a lot of
we all do as fans.
Yeah.
We're all guilty of it.
A lot of it is the look, that's the third option, but legitimately, it's not the third option. The third option as a wide receiver is the fourth option in the offense, at least.
Because you've got Jack Doyle, exactly. And then your receivers catch balls. And
yep. You've got that, and then you've got – now, how many times is he going to go legitimately to his fourth read?
Right, yeah. And if they're smart – I mean, let's say the offensive line isn't full-on clicking yet, and he's still – and Luck's still getting pressured a lot. They'll eventually need to work in some quick passes for him and quit dropping him back for so long. So, yeah.
And they will. He won't be the fourth option on every single play. I just mean when everybody's healthy, everybody's in the game, and everybody's got a breather, and he's going to be the fourth option in that offense at best. That's if he beats out
Dorsett and Chester Rogers. I mean, let's say Dorsett is even on par with what he's done his first couple years. He's still going to be a deep threat and will have earned playing time. He's at a decoy at worst. You know, he'll be out there at times. Chester Rogers, I would imagine, will at least get a little better and will earn some playing time. So there's a lot of looks to go around. And Aiken may be a valuable player, and he may be very dependable and sure-handed and will move the chains and score some touchdowns. Mm-hmm. But from a fantasy perspective, he's probably not going to be a guy, number one, that you want on your consistent roster, and he's probably only going to be a guy that you play if you're in bye week hell that week.
Yep. That's true. So then what's your thought process on Marlon Mack then?
Marlon Mack. If I kind of boil down are you talking about just from a fantasy perspective or just kind of in general for him this
fantasy.
Year? It's kind of hard to project because Robert Turbin is going to have, I think, a prominent role in the offense. And I think Frank Gore, I don't feel like they feel any need to preserve him anymore. He could still be like a 15 carry or more per game guy, Gore. Mm-hmm. And then you give Turbin at least 5 carries, maybe a couple catches in there. Mack, unless he just comes in and blows the door off and is a big-time playmaker all the time, he's probably not going to be a guy you want to have on your roster outside of keeper leagues and dynasty setups, at least not initially. I mean, as the season progresses, I could be totally wrong, and he could prove to be such a playmaker that he hops over Turbin, and, you know, they may even, you know, cut into Gore's carries even more for him. You never know. But sitting here right now, I know he has a lot of work until he becomes a consistent NFL running back just because his system was not NFL-based.
Right.
We haven't really seen him in a traditional pass protection role. So if he's not good at that right away will keep him off of the field.
Yeah.
just traditional handoffs from a single back set with the quarterback under center. There's just so much we don't know. Right now, I'm considering him an unknown. I think he will eventually develop into a really good player, but as a rookie, I don't have super high hopes, at least from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah. What? I mean, he has the ability to, you know, I think we've, well, I don't remember if it was you and I talking about it or not, but I think that he's got some of that ability to shine a little bit like Donald Brown did in his final year with his contract.
Yeah, we've compared him to Donald Brown before. Yeah.
Okay, I thought that was you. I was pretty certain that it was, but I didn't want to say that and then be wrong. I don't know that that, I mean, I don't even know that it would be quite to that extent, to be honest with you. But that, I think, ultimately, in the way that Brown played in his contract year, that's what you want out of the guy, at least to have some flashes of that, you know, in his initial year. Because Gore isn't going to be any different. Gore's going to be Gore.
Yeah.
Turbin's going to be Turbin. The ability for Mac to come in and be a reliable pass catcher out of the backfield, the reliability for him to come in when Gore needs a breather or when Gore possibly gets injured or anything like that, he's going to have to be ready. And kind of what we talked about earlier is he's going to have to be ready for all this. And right now at OTAs, without Gore there, it's a perfect time for him to get those snaps.
I think he could wind up being a more effective Josh Ferguson this year because, I mean, Ferguson did see plenty of reps last year, but as a runner, he could never make anything happen, even in the preseason. I think Mac is a better runner than Ferguson is. Ferguson is a very advanced pass catcher for a running back, so he's, you know, better than most running backs at pass catching, but you want your running back to be a good runner. So I think Mac could be kind of in that Josh Ferguson role that Ferguson was in last year, but just a better runner, which will lead to him getting more carries. I've kind of pictured him as a baseline of a guy who could be the third down back when the distance is five or longer, you know, maybe get him out in space on a screen and see what he can do. Cause he's the fastest of the running back group, excluding Ferguson. I think he's the biggest home run threat that the Colts have at running back. So third and medium or longer, I think, is going to be his initial start out.
Yeah, but what did Ferguson do last year catching the ball that made anybody wow?
Nothing. I mean, he just can catch the ball. Nothing happened after. He just can catch it.
Right. Okay, so he's a natural pass catcher. I'm good with that. That dude, mm-hmm. he did nothing after the catch last year.
Well, I don't think they utilize him right. He's not really a traditional running back. You have to get him out in space, and I think you have to hit him on the move. I don't think you can just hit him on a screen where you're waiting for blockers to develop in front of him. I think you almost have to get him on a slant, something where he's already moving and doesn't really have to break much of his stride.
Yeah.
Because he can do some damage in the open field, but as soon as he gets surrounded, he's done.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he could. And you could see that was evident last year that he could. It just, every time I'm like, okay, there's some space. Still, one arm tackles coming down. You know, I just was like, God, what is this guy going to break out? Do something. You know,
he's got to step up because that Dalton Crossan, we already know that, I don't even know how to say a guy's name, but we already know Chris Ballard kind of likes him because he said he's a guy to look out for this offseason.
Yeah.
That undrafted free agent. Mm-hmm. He's a good pass catcher, apparently. He's not as athletic and has the wiggle that Ferguson does, but it's not all about athleticism all the time. It's how effective you can be with what you've got. So
yeah, and if there's a Radcliffe from Louisville.
I
didn't like him initially, but I watched a little more tape on him. I started to, you know, warm up to him a little bit. He's got some nice moves. He's got something there.
He's another methodical runner. He's not special, but he can get the job done.
Yeah, I don't know. I just really wanted them to give Turbin an opportunity last year because Ferguson was just stinking up the joint, and I just wanted Turbin to be one of their third options, you know, out of the passing game or something. And then he just never really accumulated anything. And the only thing he did really was run that kickoff back against Green Bay, which was awesome because that was the beginning of a shellacking of Green Bay in Green Bay.
And see, that was Todman. That wasn't even Ferguson.
No, I said Turbin even, and I meant Todman.
Oh, yeah.
I said Turbin like twice even. I meant Todman.
Oh, yeah. No, Turbin, I think, developed, kind of earned a bigger role for this year. He was pretty effective. And I think with how picky Chris Ballard has shown to be, especially with the Colts free agents that wound up hitting free agency this year, compared to how many he actually brought back. Mm-hmm. He didn't have to do that with Turbin. Yeah. He obviously saw something there.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, think a lot of us saw it too.
He's a bigger guy, and he can gash you for some yards if you get him out in space. So I think he could be a really effective player getting more snaps. I'm just really curious to see how they divvy things up this year.
Yeah.
Because part of me thinks, number one, they're not preparing for a deep playoff run, and it's his last year under contract. So I kind of think they're just going to let Frank Gore do whatever. I don't know how many carries that means, but I don't think they're going to be playing it safe with him. Like, I feel like there was probably a little bit of conservation of him the last couple years because they told us that the whole time, at least early in the year. But I don't see much point in it this year. Like, if the guy's got the hot hand or something, just keep going to him.
Yeah.
Not going to hurt me.
So let's transition over a little bit to something you wanted to talk about for sure, was the NFL 100 series that they've got going right now. Let's start with our guy first at 61 was T.Y. Hilton. Now, I'm asking you specifically, do you have any issues with that ranking as far as 61, the number, not so much of any of the players around it?
61, no. But on the wrap-up show for that, I think they said there was like 10 or 11 other receivers that were going to be named ahead of him inside those next 60 picks. That I have a huge problem with.
Yes. No.
I don't think he's a top five guy or anything, but I've watched this show for several years now. Every year when it comes on, it's all about what have you done for me lately. And what Hilton has done for the league lately is lead it in yards.
Yep.
It's more than Beckham, Green, Julio Jones, Mike Evans. He led the league in receiving. And he has gone over 1,000 yards each of the last 4 years and over 1,300 yards two of the last 3 years. He is, even when Luck's not in there, Hilton is Mr. Reliable. So, and considering, I think 2 years ago, he was ranked number 35. So I know he was not ranked last year because the Colts had just a crap year. Their 2015 performance got him unranked for last year's 2016 list. 61, understanding how the list works because I've watched it every year, I don't mind that. I do not like that the fact that there's like 10 or 11 other receivers ahead of him. I don't agree with that.
Yeah, let's start with the one that sticks out to me, and he's actually not the first. I mean, Dez Bryant was 60. I wouldn't argue necessarily with somebody saying Dez Bryant's better than T.Y. Hilton as far as just in general. You know what I'm saying? Now, you can you can argue stats and reliability and role and all that stuff if you want to. My issue is, how the hell does Amari Cooper get 53?
I know he's up and coming, and he's a very good, well-balanced player. And
he's
I think he's
unreliable in the second half of the season.
Well, he killed me. He ruined my fantasy season.
Mine too. So. 2 years in a row.
I'm bitter about that. I started him in a championship game when I wanted with everything in my heart to start Taylor Gabriel. But I said I have to start Amari Cooper because if I don't and I lose because of it, I'll not forgive myself. And he went and crapped the bed on me. So I'm still bitter about that.
Me too. I think maybe I'm bitter, but I still don't understand it. I mean, don't tell me that Amari Cooper is better than T.Y. Hilton. I'm not listening
to
that.
I would even say I don't think Dez Bryant is either. I think Dez Bryant is pretty inconsistent as well.
And he may not be. And I agree with you. But that's I mean, when you look at the overall talent and what he has, that he has the ability to do and what he has shown, I'm having a hard time arguing with that. But when it comes to Amari Cooper, I'm sorry, that's going to be an argument.
I'd agree. Like I said, I don't think T.Y. is a top five guy, but he's top eight, you know? Like, what else does he have to do? He proves it every year. I understand he is smaller than people like, but like all he can do with the size that he's been given is go out and perform, and that's exactly what he does.
Now, when we get to the next guy on the board, obviously Andrew Luck is number 51 with that. I mean, I guess I think that it's okay. I mean, I'm not necessarily saying that we should argue this. He has injured season under him. You know, he started, I wouldn't even say he's down a downhill slope, but he hasn't been the guy he was the first 3 years necessarily. Last year, he had a fantastic season. I think if there's an argument against it, that would be it, aside from the injury part of it, you know, over the last couple years. But, I mean, I don't know. This one, it seems a bit perplexing to me. I'm not so sure that I agree with it. What do you say?
It's because of the injuries and the Colts going 8-8 each of the last 2 years. That's why. But what baffles me a little bit is it's all on the players that decide this. The players, I think it's a panel of like 400 players or something. They voted on this, and this is where the rankings come from. I've literally never heard an opposing player say anything but just glaring reviews about Andrew. So I don't understand how he's not always like in the top 30 or 40.
Mm-hmm.
And I do know because of the Colts' performance as a team and his injuries that knocks him a little bit, which is why I understand why he's 50 on this. But I have a feeling when some of the other quarterbacks that come out on this list, I'm probably going to be a little upset about it. Because, I mean, Blake Bortles was ahead of Luck last year, I think.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Just stupid stuff like that. You know, like, it's almost ridiculous to the point where you just don't pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
You just almost can't entertain it.
It is hard. It's hard not to want to argue it. But at the same time, you know, it's just conversation. It's something you got to talk about. You know, it's just impossible not to argue it as well when it seems a little, you know, annoying. And it's something that's come up several times. And especially, like you said, last year, a guy like Bortles goes ahead of him. And that's a little ridiculous. So what else you got, brother?
Well, let's see. You know, now that we're in OTA season, not super worried about the injuries right now because they're off-season things. And we're not even at training camp yet. So we don't know what's a true threat to any of these guys' seasons, but you know, Luck is still out recovering from his shoulder surgery. Malik Hooker recovering from hip labrum and not shoulder labrum, but hip labrum and sports hernia surgery. Let's see, Kendall Langford still kind of getting rested up from his knee. We don't really know anything about Quincy Wilson's lower leg, but by all accounts that I've seen, he's supposed to be fine. It's very precautionary when they throw boots on guys nowadays. It looks a lot worse than it is. But the biggie is Clayton Gethers. I'll be honest, I'm not trying to sound the alarm and be all dramatic, but I legitimately fear for his future as a football player.
Yep. George and I talked about this on Wednesday's show. We were in the same boat with this. We talked about some of the injuries, like Langford and those guys sitting out, like what that kind of means for, you know, the future, at least this year. But Gethers, I agree with you. I'm totally on board with you. That's frightening because and he was talking about, you know, and we both kind of were talking about how it's a little reminiscent of, you know, Bob Sanders and Delano Howell.
Yeah.
Those two guys, you know. Obviously Sanders was a guy who was around for a while, but he was oft injured towards the end of his career with the Colts. But Delano Howell showed a ton of possibility back there, and then he was just gone, man, after his neck deal.
He was a promising player, a hard-hitting, strong safety. I think it was one play that hurt his neck. He went on IR the rest of that year, if I remember correctly, and then never recovered enough to make the team the next season through camp and was never heard of again.
Yep.
And then Gethers, I mean, I'm not going to pretend to be a doctor, but I don't know that his neck injury was as serious as like Peyton's, for example, but Peyton is a quarterback and Gethers is essentially a linebacker. He's a strong safety, but he plays in the box enough to be a linebacker. And I mean, he has a neck injury.
He's a hitter.
Yeah, he is in a position that is constantly affecting his head, neck, and back. And number one, his body obviously didn't fix that issue on its own. Mm-hmm. So you don't know how quick of a healer he is. So, I mean, yes, he had surgery, which may fix the issue for now, but what's his long-term prognosis? It's scary to think that we may already be done with seeing Clayton Gethers, you know?
Yeah, that's awful for the
future. maybe he comes back. Like, let's say he starts the season on PUP and still comes back this year, but things aren't right. I mean, we just don't know how it's going to go.
Right.
He's such a physical player. It's hard to imagine that being something he can play with for 8 more years, you know?
Right. Well, man, the thing is he fits so perfectly with what the Colts want to do.
He's a perfect building block for them on defense. He's one of those guys that he easily probably fit into Chris Ballard's plans.
Right.
You know, he's looking at the defense like, okay, well, yeah, we obviously have to have Gethers in there as one of the guys to plug in and build around as one of our young pieces.
Right.
And now we, you know, he as a player and we as fans may get, you know, cheated out of that again.
Right. Well, and not only that, but I mean, look, he's the perfect piece at that position, you know, and people constantly, when we talk about safeties, oh, don't forget, you know, the safeties aren't necessarily free safety, strong safety in Pagano's system, man, get off that train. Okay. Because these guys are not intermixable. I mean, when you look at Gethers and you look at Hooker, those two guys are not the same position, okay?
No, one of them is just a clear strong safety and one is a clear free safety.
Yes.
Like, Mike Adams is one of the only starting caliber guys who literally could do both for Pagano over the last several years.
Right, and if you want to look at the way they play, you could say that Butler is too. But he's not physical enough. He's not durable enough. I mean, I'm not saying Gethers has obviously got a nasty injury right now, so talking about durability. But, I mean, when you look at his physical stature, you know, he's gotten a little bit bigger, I guess, since he's, you know, known that he's coming back to be a safety. But that dude, he's just not – he's 30-something, and he's not a built to be the enforcer in there. And, you know, not too long ago, I brought this up to you before I wrote it, but I ended up writing a piece on FanRag that was talking about – the way that they're building this secondary and this linebacking core, they have a little more possibility to move to a cover three a little bit more often in there, which gives this defense like some significant alterations within their scheme. Allows for a lot of play in there. I mean, you've got Gethers to take care of the flats or to bite on those crossing routes and just light people up. You've got Hooker deep middle who can rotate to either side and play that role that he was drafted to play. And then now you've got another guy opposite Vontae Davis who can also be in press tech all the time. You know, they've constantly had guys opposite him like Toller and Robinson last year, where those guys were often in off man coverage, whereas Vontae had to be the guy in press tech. And now they can both do that, put them both on an island. Maybe that's not ideal initially, but then you've also got the guys that they've got. They're trying to get in there with Hairston, and then they have Rashawn Melvin, another guy who can play in the slot. And they've just got so many building pieces to be able to move coverages around, and that's interesting. And without Gethers, a lot of that breaks down.
It does. There's because, I mean, Gethers has his own injury issues. And like you said, Butler does as well. And Butler isn't super versatile, only just realistically thinking about his durability. Because, I mean, not to mention because of his instincts and, you know, ball skills, you almost have to play him at free safety, because if you want any turnovers, it would be smart to send him back there deep. And you don't know what TJ Green even is yet, honestly. He can be kind of a physical player. He can be kind of a physical player, but at the same time, he's got great speed and things like that, but struggled in coverage last year. So without Gethers, the whole group does become a lot less diverse, it seems. Mm-hmm. So we hope for the best for him as a person, but for the Colts, selfishly looking at them as a team, I mean, their defense gets less creative without him.
Yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, because they just, like we've already spoken about several times now, they just don't have that other guy on the roster that really does what he does within that defense. I mean, who are they going to have do that at strong? I mean, does Tyson Graham, is that one of those guys? Andrew Williamson, Lee Hightower, Matthias Farley. None of those guys can do what Gethers does. I mean, I don't know about Graham, so I'm not going to speak on him. And for
Graham
that matter,
is big, I know, but I mean, Clayton Gethers isn't just a stocky guy. He's also got great closing speed and instincts.
Yep.
You know, like the instincts you can't teach. Like it. That's just something that sets those type of guys apart. So you never know.
Yep, I agree.
And from watching Matthias Farley at Notre Dame, he is a strong safety because he's more effective in the box, but he's not that type of playmaker and just play ender for opposing offenses that Gethers is. So Gethers is the only one that brought that to the table.
Yeah. I'm interested to see, and we get to we're talking about secondary real quick, and I'm kind of interested to see what that Dante Blackman does, what he brings, to the table if they start talking about him. One of the guys that George was telling me the other day that keeps coming up, you know how this happens every year, that certain guys just keep getting brought up, that kind of seems like out of the blue, but you can tell that all the coaching staff and people watching are really paying attention to him. And one of them was Luke Rhodes, the inside linebacker, the guy he was on the roster last year.
They even have like one or two long snappers now, and I saw pictures the other day of him still getting in some snaps.
Luke Rhodes?
Yeah. He was before they had after they got rid of Overton and that other guy they had signed this year, Forrest something, and before they brought Thomas Hennessy in, Luke Rhodes was the long snapper at the very beginning of the offseason program.
The linebacker was?
Yeah.
Yep. Really?
He was snapping for him, and so it shows his versatility.
Yeah.
And, I mean, to be completely honest with you, I think it makes sense if they keep him doing that in training camp and battling with Thomas Hennessy, and Luke Rhodes is pretty good at it, then why not keep him? Because he also brings versatility as a linebacker.
Yeah, for sure, man. That'd be, that might be one of those too-good-to-be-true scenarios. Let's hope that Luke Rhodes is a phenomenal long snapper, like the best long snapper ever, if he wants to do that, because that would be great to have another linebacker on the roster and have it not – I mean, one guy's taking two positions. That would be phenomenal. You just don't see that happen very often, and that would be great because that adds more talent. That allows another spot for somebody else that can come in and legitimately play. The only issue is they only have so many active guys on each week, each game day. So,
yeah.
I mean,
well, that's kind of my thinking, is they don't have to have a long snapper on the roster. They can just keep him on as a linebacker and a long snapper.
Yeah. Well, Jake, appreciate you dropping by again and chatting it up with me, man. It's good to catch up with you. I know that you're a busy dude over there at Pro Football Spot, but tell everybody where they can catch you on Twitter and everything else that that you're doing.
Yes, you can catch me on Twitter at JakeArthurPFS, also on Facebook, JakeArthur, Pro Football Spot. Right now, my team and I were in the middle of putting out our 2017 fantasy football profiles for the Colts, getting in our camp battles by position. I think we're just wrapped up as of today with our kind of deep dives on the Colts draft picks. got a feature piece for each of them. Anthony Walker's just came out today, so go check us out.
Absolutely. Make sure you guys are all subscribing to the podcast. Get in there and give us a rating and review. Really appreciate those. And you guys can catch me as well on Twitter at mdainley_NFL. You can catch the show at Locked On Colts. And we'll catch you guys all next week. Make sure you guys all have a safe and fun Memorial Day. Get them grills fired up. Get the coolers full. And have a great weekend, guys. We'll see you next week right here on Locked On Colts.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily podcast on the Indianapolis Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.